Can I get an amen, church? That's a Javism. Amen, church. It simply means, yep, that's about right. I love the way that thing ends. Nobody has it all together. Because then we immediately think of ourselves. And then they let us off the hook by saying, not even the family sitting in front of you this morning. But we have that tendency to come in and as soon as we walk through the door of the church, man, we just throw on that happy face that we're supposed to have, regardless of what happens to be going on in our homes or in our vehicles on the way here. And that can be a dangerous place for us, actually, if we're not careful. And so, anyway, here we are, First Steps, talking about family today. We continue this series. Last week, great, great Sunday right here in this room, as we got to hear from two gentlemen, Mr. Kevin Smith, Mr. Don Myers, about fitness and about finances, and really asking that question, what do we need to do if we need to take the first steps in these areas of our lives? Where do we go? And if you did not receive an email from me yesterday, we need to get your email address on my e-letter list. Yesterday, sent out a lot of helpful information for follow-up with either Kevin or Don. And those guys would love to be able to walk alongside you any way they could to help you take some of those first steps in those areas of your lives. Kevin actually had somebody come up to me this morning and say, what was the gentleman's name who spoke last week? Was that Will Smith? No, he's an actor. This is Kevin Smith. Kevin's right over here if you'd like to talk to him after service today. Ultimately, if you didn't get that email, Kevin's offering a 20-minute free consultation for anybody who would like to come and spend some time with him, for him to be able to give you some individualized input about first steps for you. And thank you so much for that. And then Pastor Travis has mentioned already about financial peace. That's coming up starting this Thursday night. If you'd like to be a part of that class, you can get signed up at the church office or by speaking with Don. Well, today we're talking about family, and specifically family life with children, and ultimately family life with children and the spiritual tones that we are setting in our home. Darla got on me last week. I made a Freudian last week, and I mentioned that she would be talking about marriage and family. And she called me this week and said, excuse me, I'm not talking about marriage, am I? I'm not sure what that meant, Bob, but for some reason, she didn't want to talk about marriage. So very specifically, life in the home as families and the spiritual tones that we're setting in our homes. Well, we've already affirmed this morning that there are no perfect families. Nobody has it all together. The Adams family does not have it all together. There's not a family in this room that has it all together. We need all the support. We need all the help and encouragement that we can get. And ultimately, that's what I hope you walk away with this morning, is that you feel encouraged and that we can help each other get pointed in the right direction for setting some of the spiritual tones in our homes. Well, several months ago now, we spent some time together on a Sunday morning right here looking at Proverbs 22:6. And here's what Proverbs 22:6 says. It says, start children off on the way they should go, and even when they are old, they will not turn from it. I don't know if you were here back in November when we talked about this, but we brought all our kids up front. We got to pray over our kids and our teens that day. And on that day, we talked very specifically about the idea that proverb, Proverbs 22:6, start children off in the way they should go, and even when they're old, they won't depart from it, that is not a guarantee, that is not a promise that the scripture writer is making to us, that ultimately, that is a hope for us as parents, and not just as parents, but as a church. That if we start our children off down the path that they should go, that along the way they're going to realize this is the healthiest, best path that I could follow, and that's the path of Jesus Christ. And that when they are old, they won't swerve from that. They won't depart from that. And not only is that a hope, I'm convinced, church, that that is a hope that is worth pursuing with our lives. Our lives individually, in our homes, and our life together as a church. And so today, we get to hear from Miss Darla Sparrow, and about some first steps in our home. Before she comes up, though, I want to read a pretty classic poem for us. I'm convinced that 90% of us this morning have heard this before or read this before. But it's called When You Thought I Wasn't Looking, from the perspective of a child to a parent. It says, when you thought I wasn't looking, I saw you hang my first painting on the refrigerator, and I wanted to paint another one. When you thought I wasn't looking, I saw you feed a stray cat, and I thought it was good to be kind to animals. When you thought I wasn't looking, I saw you make my favorite cake for me, and I knew that little things are special things. When you thought I wasn't looking, I heard you say a prayer, and I believed that there was a God to talk to. When you thought I wasn't looking, I felt you kiss me goodnight, and I felt loved. When you thought I wasn't looking, I saw tears come from your eyes, and I learned that some things hurt, but it's all right to cry. When you thought I wasn't looking, I saw that you cared, and I wanted to be everything that I could be. When you thought I wasn't looking, I looked, and I wanted to say thanks for all the things I saw when you thought I wasn't looking. I love that poem because it speaks directly to the idea of what our children are seeing in us, even when we don't realize it. What our children are hearing from us, even when we don't realize it. Today, though, we're going to spend some time in conversation around the things that we are very intentionally putting into place in the lives of our homes, in the lives of our kids, so that our hopes for Proverbs 22:6 can come to fruition. Understanding that none of us are perfect, none of us have it all together, that there is some level of us that does want to be consistent, that there's some level of us that does want to be following the path of God, and that as families, as parents, we have a responsibility in the lives of our kids to put in place some very intentional efforts to set the spiritual direction for our lives and for our homes, and ultimately set them up on a path that they should go with the hope that when they are old, they won't depart from it. So with that said, will you put your hands together and show your love for Miss Darla Sparrow as she comes this morning. I've known Darla for, this is going to be scary. I've known Darla for almost 20 years now. And that's really hard to believe. It's hard to say. But if the way her kids turned out is any indication to her, we're in for a treat this morning. And you can just start setting all your stuff wherever you... All this is yours up here. You have bags and books. And
I am a teacher.
She's a teacher. Do you need a chalkboard or a whiteboard?
I do show and tell.
Do you need a ruler?
No.
Okay, good.
I need listening ears.
Listening ears. Everybody have their listening ears on? One more time, put your hands together, show your love for Miss Darla Sparrow. Thank you so much.
Psalm 127, 3a says, behold, children are a gift of God. You know, we just came off of Christmas, and gift giving was a really fun thing to participate in. And it reminded me of a gift that I gave my mom. And you know, whenever I do these show and tell things, it always makes Bob's eyes kind of roll. But I know that Dwayne's got my back, because in my defense, my show and tell is not as big as a mattress. Sorry. About 30-some years ago, I presented my mom with this gift. And you know, when you give somebody a gift, you hope that they're going to receive it with great joy. They're going to really appreciate it and maybe even share it. Well, this reminded me, when my mom passed away in July, and my sister and I were going through the house and retrieving things that she had given mom, and I retrieved the things I had given mom. And so anyway, this gift, she really did receive with great joy, and she treasured it. It is footprints of Terry. I made them out of plaster Paris, one for Todd, Terry, and Tony. And I wrote a little poem about them. And so anyway, she received this gift with great joy, and she treasured it. As a matter of fact, she even shared it. She hung it on her wall for 40-some years. Well, that gift reminds me of a book that Bob and I read at the beginning of parenting, actually. And it's not even a book that's in print today. It was a book by Ann Ortland called Children Are Wet Cement. And I don't remember a lot about the book, but a couple of things that I took from that. One is that children are very impressionable, they're pliable, they're moldable. And she speaks specifically even like to 1, 2, and 3-year-olds. The second concept was that they're wet cement and they set up fast. Well, that's kind of like an awesome thought when you think, you know, you have one run at this. You hope you get it right. People who study child development and stuff have written texts that say basic personality traits are set in children when they're age 3. And then they will do case studies and follow those kids all the way up to age 26. And they're finding that the personality traits in a 26-year-old is basically the ones that they formed when they were 3. So, you know, eek, you've got a big responsibility here and you're a little bit intimidated. The really cool thing about God is, though, he has given us this gift. And as last week we remembered from Kevin and from Don, our human bodies are not our own. They belong to God. Our money is not our own. It belongs to God. And today we know that our children, they're not our own. We don't own them body and soul. They are gifts. We just get to be the custodial parent for about 18 years. And once again, the cool thing about gift giving is that when God gave us the gift, he also gave us an instruction book. Luke 2:52 says that Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. I don't know of, we know that Mary and Joseph were very human. And that if they had the model child, it kind of maybe makes you think they might have been the model parents. This is not in the Bible, so I'm just drawing my own conclusions here. But because they were devout Jewish parents, I want to believe that they went to the synagogue regularly. They listened to the scriptures regularly. They embraced them and they taught them. One in particular that I'm sure they heard often was found in Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 8. We know it as the Shema. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God. The Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. And you shall teach them to your sons diligently and talk about them when you sit in the house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise. And I think that that said to Mary and Joseph, wow, we're on kid patrol 24/7. We've got to capitalize on every teachable moment. We've got the son of, you know, how would you like to be the parent of the Son of God? Son of God and all of his siblings. So, in the teaching world, we call it incidental teaching. These are teachable moments that while you have these little impressionable children, yes, you point out the goodness of God. If you're sitting at the table, you're getting in the car, you're praying, asking for protection, and then you arrive back home and you thank God. When you're going on a nature walk, you're pointing out the beautiful creation of the flower, of the cute little fuzzy puppy, whatever it is, the faithfulness of the sun rising and the moon and the stars, the power of God with the crashing waves and the strong wind. You know, these are all things that little eyes, they're watching, they're listening, and you are making God present in their life 24/7. But, you know, if we want to instruct our children and give them a firm foundation, it's going to take a little more than incidental teaching. It's really going to have to be intentional. I didn't read this in any book. I just kind of fell into it by default. But in my opinion, the last 15 minutes of the day is when you have a captive audience and you can do the greatest work in helping to develop your children spiritually. It's, you know, I understand exhaustion and busyness. If I could take just a little slice out of my life, and I didn't know Duane was going to show this video because I'm thinking, well, yeah, that's exactly where it is. A typical morning getting ready to go to school, and in this case it was church, but, you know, you pry three kids out of bed. You make sure they have their breakfast, they have their clothes, you get their book bags, all the projects they've worked on, and out the door you go. You get all the kids planted in where they're supposed to be, then you yourself go into your classroom. You teach 8 hours. After school, it's time to run somebody to ball practice, somebody to piano lesson, somebody has a doctor's appointment. After all of that, then you run back home, and now it's time for dinner. And after dinner is homework time. And everybody needs a little bit of mom or dad. But while you're doing that, don't forget you've got to throw a load of laundry in. And when it gets to be 8 o'clock, you want to say, guys, 8 o'clock, go brush your teeth and hop in bed. That's the easy way out. But to be intentional, you really need to pray and ask God to give you that extra strength, that little extra oomph for the end of the day. Because instead of sending your children to bed, it's so much better to follow them into the bedroom. And once you're there, you're in charge. It's not free choice time. You don't let your kids run to the bookshelf and grab any book just so you can pat yourself on the back and say, yep, I read to my kid every day. They might select a book that is 101 bugs. And then they have nightmares with the spiders and centipedes. So you select the book. And this is a long time ago now, you know. Kenneth Taylor wrote a book called The Bible in the Eyes, in Pictures for Little Eyes. And we use that regularly. Kenneth Taylor was the father of 10 children, so he must have known something about kids. And the book that he wrote, and he wrote several, but the one in particular I'm thinking about is the book had very colorful pictures. The stories were very short because we know that little ones have attention span about that much before they start banging on the book. There were comprehension questions, one or two comprehension questions, and then there was an application. I went to the bookstores and I tried to find something similar to that, and it's really hard. You can find some good books for intermediates and older kids, but for little ones, 1, 2, and 3, they're kind of hard to find. This one in particular is, this is by Tim O'Connor. It's called 100 Bible Stories. And it does have very nice, colorful pictures. Stories are very short. There are no comprehension questions, so you have to be kind of creative in that area. But then you can always make that application. So bedtime is a time when you have your own little captive audience that you're in charge of, because you've selected the book, and you select, and you might give some choices on songs, but this is not the time to sing, and the wheels on the bus go round and round. This is the time where you pick out, you know, a Sunday school song, or VBS, or Kinder Church. And after you have your story, after you have your prayer time, and your singing time, now it's prayer time. And you are going to model what it looks like to revere God. So you get on your knees. And it's the cutest thing. Most of the kids would just jump out of bed because, you know what, they want to be just like you. And so you model praying. How do you talk to God? And the hand is very interesting. It almost has a magical power. I did not really realize this. You know, I kind of fell into it through the years. And now, you know, there's some more information about human touch. But the shoulder to the hand is called the safe zone. And if you will lay your hand on your child's shoulder, arm, hand, whatever, when you're praying, the words that you're saying will go so much deeper and last so much longer. The human touch, when you touch a child, it releases it's called the cuddle hormone. Now, the technical name is oxytocin. Make sure you hear that, toe. Oxytocin. And it releases a feeling of calm and security. So much easier and, I think, more productive. Don't send your child to bed hoping that they don't crawl under the covers and play electronic games. Better to follow your child and hope and pray that as they fall asleep, you've given them a hug and a kiss and you've tucked them in, you're going to hope that they're going to be reflecting on that Bible hero you just talked about and how it applied to them in their daily living. Maybe the song is spinning in their head, or maybe they're just reflecting on the voice of mom or dad who has just talked to Jesus about them personally. Well, Jesus did increase in wisdom, and we know that instruction is both incidental and also intentional. He also grew in stature. Now, barring any kind of physical defect, children are going to grow taller and they're going to gain weight, and then they're going to be robust little happy campers. Today, I don't really want to talk about nutrition. I'm not qualified to talk about nutrition or child psychology or anything of the sort. I'll just share something that we incorporated when our children were little, and I used it in the classroom for 36 years. And that is the whole thing about making choices for your food and for your clothing. It is disastrous. I found this out. It is disastrous to ask a very small child an open-ended question. For example, you don't ever say, "What do you want to eat today?" or "What do you want to wear today?" Because that little strong-willed being, if given the chance, will become very demanding, and you'll have lots of meltdowns and lots of tantrums because that's not what they wanted to eat and that's not what they wanted to wear. You save yourself a whole lot of stress and frustration if you give closed options. You know, you're the adult. You know what's good for your child. So you pick out two or three things they like. They get to make a choice, but it's a closed option choice. The same thing with clothing. Okay, you're the adult. You read the weather forecast. You know what's appropriate. So you lay out two or three things and let them pick. Obviously, when they get a little older and they have the ability to make good choices, then you loosen the rein on them. But you're always striving for, you know, you want to encourage your kids at all levels to eat nutritious food and to dress appropriately with modesty. Jesus increased in wisdom, he increased in stature, and he increased in favor with God. You wonder often, you know, how can I get my child to love God? They're so little. Well, here is one thing that I think. I know I've read in Scripture that obedience is better than sacrifice. And if our children are going to grow up and they're going to be obedient to God and follow the Ten Commandments, obedience has to start with their earthly parents. And with that obedience comes the whole concept of discipline. Now, back in the day, and this book still is in print, Dr. Dobson wrote a book, Dare to Discipline. It was followed by The Strong-Willed Child, which Bob and I felt that he'd probably written that specifically for Terry Sparrow. But the book, Dare to Discipline, has lots of great principles in it. The two that we lifted were these. Number one, Dr. Dobson says we teach our children not to listen. And when I first read that, I was a little offended. I'm thinking, I don't think that's right. And then I'll give you a little scenario, and then maybe you will have second thoughts as well. Let's say that Susie is watching television, and mom walks through the living room and says, "Susie, we're going to leave in about 15 minutes, and you need to turn that TV off." And Susie continues to watch TV. So mom does her little thing. She comes back through, and, "Susie, turn off the TV. We're going to leave." This happens. Now, you know, normal speaking, decibels between like 50 and 60 decibels. Well, by the time mom comes through the fifth time, and she realizes that they're going to be late, now she's up to about 75 or 80, maybe 85 decibels. "I told you to turn that off." And Susie has a meltdown because mom's yelling at her and hurting her feelings. Well, who's to blame here? Basically, mom. And because mom has taught Susie that she doesn't really mean what she says the first four times. It's not until she's up here and her neck is bulging with veins and her face is red and she's stressed. So Dr. Zobin says, "Let me tell you how to teach a child to listen. You see, there's nothing wrong with their ears. They can hear. They just don't listen." So he says, number one, get their attention. Stand in front of the television. Take the book away. Take the game away, whatever it is. And say, "Look at me. I'm going to tell you this one time, and I'm going to expect you to do it. We're going to leave in 15 minutes, and you need to be ready. Do you understand what I just said?" "Yes, yes." "Okay, repeat to me. What did I just say?" So they repeat. Now, if you're not ready when it's time to go, whatever you're wearing is what you're going to leave in. Do you understand what I'm just saying? "Yes, yes." Okay. If mom has done a good job, and dad, I should keep including dad in this, taught the children a good job of listening, then when it's time to go, they're standing at the door ready to go. Everybody's happy, and they actually can put on an authentic smile when they get to church. Let's go back and pretend that Susie didn't learn to listen. What does mom do? Does she cut her some slack? "Oh, she's so little. It's okay if we're a little bit late." No, no. If you issue a threat, you carry through on a threat. Because if you don't carry through on a threat, then that makes you a liar. And they don't ever believe anything you say. So what does mom do? She comes, she maintains that level of 50 to 60 decibels and simply picks Susie up and out the door they go. And I did mention that this is, you're doing all this when they're little. It's really hard to pick up somebody who's bigger than you are. So, we know that obedience and listening is very key. The second concept that we lifted from Dr. Dobson's book was the whole concept of boundaries. He says you establish boundaries for your kids because you love them and because you want to protect them. And he goes into a little scenario of when his son Ryan was small. And Ryan zigged when he's supposed to zag, and so he got sent in timeout. He was sent to his room, and Dr. Dobson said, "And don't come out until I tell you. It's okay." Well, Ryan was good for a while, but then he got a little bored. So he gets up, and he starts edging toward the doorway. He didn't get out. He just went toward the doorway. And so maybe he could just put a toe out. Just a toe out was okay. Now, pause that, and here's the problem. Parents who don't pay attention to those little boundaries that are being tested, it's not long before not only is his toe out, but now his foot is, and then his leg, and then all of a sudden he's totally out of the boundaries of the love and protection that the parent has set for them. They're out of control. And parents scratch their head. How can this happen? How did I get so out of control of my kids? So Dr. Dobson says, when the kids do this, that's called the hairy toe syndrome. And you nip it. You address it. So much easier to stay on the couch and yell and scream at them. You have to get up. You have to actually get up and address this situation. And so then you're going to give an additional discipline, a consequence. The thing about consequences is you have to be really careful. The consequence needs to fit the infraction. You don't want to go for overkill. And the other thing is, you always have to leave yourself some ceiling here, because that strong-willed child will do it one more time. And you're going to have to tighten the screw. And if they continue to do it, you're going to have to tighten it some more. So the caveat here is, let's go back to the TV thing. You're not going to come in like in thunder and say, all right, no more TV for the entire year. You're done with TV. You know that. They know that. That makes you a liar. So what do you do? You take the TV away for the rest of the day. Okay, and if there is still not any compliance, now you're going to take it away for the week, etc. And so the whole thing is, you do want to leave yourself a little bit of space there. And you have to be consistent. You can't keep cutting them slack. You know, the thing is, both of these strategies seem to be pretty harsh, but all you have to do is just follow through two or three times, and you make believers out of them. And then the stress level at home, as well as in the classroom, goes way down. Jesus increased in wisdom, in stature, in favor with God and with man. How do you get your kids to get along with other kids? Well, once again, you're the example. They're going to look at you. Do you get along with other people? How does your character look? Do you tell little white lies? Do you cheat just a little bit? Do you sort of kind of use God's name in vain? Once again, you know, the little ears are hearing, the little eyes are watching, and they want to be just like you. When we're trying to develop character, Jesus is a standard. We all know that, and we agree on that. We also know that you've had your captive audience the last 15 minutes of the day, and you've studied Bible heroes, and you've applied it to their lives. So valuable. And you know, the thing is, you can even step out into the secular world and get some help. I've used several books, but one of the series that I really love is the Berenstain Bear books. Now, Jan and Stan Berenstain, they weave Christian character into almost every story they ever write. The bears go to church. They're very conscientious, and they're sorry when they make bad mistakes. And this one is even, the Berenstain Bears count their blessings. The only caveat that I would give you would be is, if you're going to use something in the secular world, you just have to know your author, and you need to read it yourself. You have to make sure that it's in line with your Christian principles. In conclusion, children are wet cement. And you know what? You are not smart enough, strong enough, disciplined enough, patient enough to do it by yourself. But we have a promise in Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. These precious gifts are given to us, and we get to treasure them. And you know, at the end of 18 years, it's time to share them and send them on. I can't think of any more noble goal in life than to take the love of Christ that we have and share it with the next generation. And that's why 3 John 4 is my very favorite scripture. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Thank you.
Because for almost 20 years I've called Darla Mom, she said to me, I don't want to field any questions after this thing. I know, though, she would love to be an outlet, a resource for you if today she shared stuff that you would like to explore, more conversation you'd like to have. I know she will make herself available to you along the way. Doesn't have to be today. You don't have to bombard her today, but in the future, in the days ahead. I remember when I was a teenager, I was 16, I knew pretty much everything there was to know in the world. Right? Nobody was going to tell me anything. And then one day I had kids and realized I didn't know nearly as much as I thought I did. And so I know there's some of us here today. We sat and listened to this material and thought, what good is this for me? I don't even have kids, or my kids are gone, or whatever. Along the way, God instructs us. And one of the cool things about being a part of a body like Centerpoint is we understand that we have a responsibility to come alongside each other, and that if you have experienced life with children already, part of that experience was so that you can have the opportunity to walk beside a younger family who is experiencing life in the home with kids. So let's encourage each other, pray for each other, support each other. Along with Darla being a resource for you in the days ahead, we want to equip you with some things. Mine is all marked up because I took notes with a Sharpie. But in our worship folders today, on the back side of your note-taking sheet, there is a list of resources. She mentioned several items that are out of print. That doesn't mean you can't get them or find them. It just means they're not actively printing new copies of that material. And so if there's something on there that that you'd like to pursue, we make those available to you. Ultimately, parents, as a church, we want to be able to help you come alongside your kids in the best way possible. And again, not that we have all the answers, but we do want to be a resource for you and for your home. In light of that, I just want to make you aware of some things that we regularly make available to you as parents through our children's ministry that align directly with the conversations that our kids are having each week. And so with that, I invite you to turn your attention to the screen for this message from Pastor Ryan.